We have no idea what the digital needs are going to look like in 10 years. Nobody does. You can't even predict that.
Hi, I'm Kiran Shetry.
And I'm Jeremy Goldman. And this is Future Proof.
Congrats to Jeremy, by the way, for getting to book and speak to Steve Cannon. Now, he is the CEO of AMB Group, which is basically the parent company of National Football League's Atlanta Falcons. And of course, the entire stadium, the Mercedes-Benz Stadium that is home to the Falcons. And you had a chance to talk to him about some very forward-thinking and forward-minded ways that they have implemented to really make the fan experience way, way better. A lot of stadiums are not anywhere near doing what they're doing.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we had the chance to talk to Steve, because one of the things that they're doing, well, you'll hear the conversation, but I think that really the future of fandom is an important thing to be looking at, because when you think about customer loyalty, everybody talks about how there's so little loyalty. And also when you talk about these real world experiences, such as going to a football game, I mean, there are some really good TVs out there. People can just sit at home if they want to, right? So this is the fact that you've got somebody who's saying, I'm going to take the fan experience to the next level, and also I'm going to plan for the next 30 years or so, let's say, that they're using the stadium. I think all of that is really impactful.
Yeah, the 30 years before we see that amazing implosion that people like to watch, right?
Those are so cool.
I know. I mean, there's something like Boys and Their Implosions. Oh my God, all my producers used to love showing those. Well, one of the things when you talked about the, you know, fandom, it is not cheap to take your family of four, let's say, right? If you wanted to go to see a game, that is probably something that you would save up for most people, unless you're super rich. And he said something really interesting to you where he said, I want this. This is basically the Ritz-Carlton of, you know, a football stadium. And he's implemented a lot of different things. The company has implemented a lot of different things, including even a Waze app so that you can make your way to your parking spot without doing that.
Right. The Waze integration, which, you know, he mentions in this conversation, is also interesting, because it's all about, you know, sometimes it's not necessarily the sexiest things to talk about. The future is all about efficiency and reducing friction.
Right.
But sometimes that's exactly what it is. So
what it is, yeah. Sexy when you're not waiting in line for, you know, 25 minutes to get your screaming kid a hot dog and a soda. So that is good. And it is expensive to not only go to games, but, you know, one of the things that I often wonder about, Jeremy, is that you have to really be a future forward person in general, business-wise, or just have a ton of capital to be able to invest in this type of thing, because it probably is not cheap to you know, reinvent the ways that certain things have been done, you know, pretty much since the beginning of dealing in large scale vending like you would at a stadium event.
Yeah, I mean, I think you definitely need to have the right capital investment. Doing things that are physical is still pretty expensive. And I think that obviously to get the buy-in, we should probably do actually a show on business transformation and talk about kind of like who's gotten the buy-in to be able to do these major projects. Because that's another thing people don't really talk about. But just to be able to navigate the political waters within an organization and sell in an idea like this is really difficult. So,
this will be a good model, I guess, for the future for others. Because look, they're talking about being able to expand possibly up to 80,000, you know, people there for big events, let's say like a huge concert or the Super Bowl coming up, by the way, go Eagles. And I think that, you know, even some of the smaller venues, you know, maybe it would be more difficult to get buy-in at the beginning, but they could probably get even more efficient than we're talking about here. Because if you can do it for 80, you can certainly do it, let's say, you know, Wrigley Field or something for 40, or Shea for 40,000 people, you know. One of the things that people complain about the most is, you know, having to wait in long lines or inefficient ways, you know, to either get into a venue or to find your way to the nearest bathroom, et cetera, et cetera. And if they can do it on this scale, it seems to me that you could do it on a much smaller scale, perhaps cheaper and easier.
The future, it's all about getting to the bathroom a little bit quicker.
And stadium beers. Don't tell me you're not running. Don't tell me you wouldn't appreciate it if there was.
I don't drink beer. I probably should, but I would have saved so much over the course of my years at Maryland if I got into beer rather than like bourbon, yeah, you know, but
would have, because we used to get quarter pitchers at the VU. Remember? I mean, quarter pitchers, what a disaster.
And on that fun note, wait, so let's go to the conversation with Steve, shall we?
Let's listen to it.
So Steve, welcome and thank you so much for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, when we spoke last year about everything that you were doing to raise the fan experience, I mean, when I looked at the numbers, just in terms of how you did from kind of 2016 to 2017, I feel like it was kind of amazing. I mean, do you want to talk about kind of how you were able to achieve that in such a short time period?
Sure. Well, it's the 5 years of planning and benchmarking and work that went into the execution that ultimately set the stage for us to make that kind of leap. From the first design drawing, the aspiration of Mercedes-Benz Stadium was to be the best sports and entertainment experience in the world. The way I like to communicate it is we are a stadium that aspires to deliver a level of hospitality on par with the Ritz-Carlton. So we're shooting for a really high standard. And when we talk about the fan experience, we're not just talking about the game. We're talking about the moment you leave your home to the moment you get back. And everything in between is what we consider our opportunity to amaze and delight the fans. So we've got an app for our Falcons and Atlanta United fans that has Waze integration that gives them the easiest route to their destination parking lot to ease that arrival experience. We hired a company that works for Disney and does throughput analysis when it came to laying out our entry experience with magnetometers and the security. We went through the science of that to make sure that we could guarantee a throughput that would allow for a 5-minute entry time, and that was our goal.
The efficiency, everything that I've read about, and it's funny because nobody ever talks about efficiency as so sexy, right? But that's something that I think everybody wants. I mean, you have people who are sometimes not going to sporting events for, you know, teams that they really love simply because it's just such a hassle. And it seems like you've taken a lot of the hassle out of the experience. And is that part of the success you would say?
Wherever we could, we tried to remove pain points. So if entry, a pain point, getting to your parking lot, a pain point. Our food and beverage, that's one of the loudest pain points across sports, is people felt like they were being taken advantage of with exorbitant prices. And this was our opportunity to rewrite that story. And that's why we launched a very innovative food and beverage program that gave folks the variety, the quality, the speed of delivery that we're looking for, but with these value prices that kind of shocked everyone.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think when I get to a game, I mean, the fact that you can get hot dogs for, is it two or three?
$2 hot dog, $2 Dasani water, refillable, a bottomless refillable Coke for $2, $3 slice of pizza. Essentially, all across the menu, there is value. And whether it's a $5 cheeseburger or if somebody wants to order something a little higher up on the price menu, we will accommodate them. So it's about value, but it's about quality, efficiency, taste, delivery, all of those are the variables that drive that fan perception of the food and beverage experience. And we tried to address all of them. Because if you just flip the switch and lower prices, you're going to drive demand. But if you don't have efficient operation, you're not going to be able to satisfy that demand. And people will wait on long lines and will ultimately be disgruntled. So you have to look at the whole system. And when we were laying out the stadium, that's why we added 55% more cooking capacity throughout all three concourses. We added 65% more points of sale so that we could put people through the stadium food and beverage experience as quickly as possible.
Well, and I was actually joking even to myself because I saw some of the stats and the fact that a lot of the seats are wider, and I was like, well, I'm the kind of guy, when I go to a game, I like to eat, so I'm happy. I feel like I'm getting wider as I'm sitting there, and noshing on everything, as they say in New York. So,
but you make a great point. It's the attention to detail and the thoughtfulness that went into the entire fan experience. It wasn't just about price. It wasn't just about entry. We expanded a 19-inch seat to a 21-inch seat because it's just more comfortable. The level of fit and finish and materials that you'll see throughout the stadium all ladder up to that experience. Our concourses are much wider. There's ambient light streaming in on all three concourses, that compared to the Georgia Dome, which was a much darker environment. So adding that light influences that overall feeling of fan experience. So it's the whole level of attention to detail around the fan that I think ultimately we're seeing an early report card, and that early report card is validating our approach.
Well, I was going to say a little bit about the report card, because I thought what was really interesting in terms of the F&B rankings in particular, so I believe it was 2016 at the Georgia Dome, maybe 18th in the NFL is what I have as the numbers, and then first in the NFL the next year, which is like, I mean, that's huge to be like kind of middle of the pack to just jumping up to the first.
Bottom 50th percentile, and we jumped all the way to first, and first by a very significant margin. Not first by a little bit, but by a wide gap to the average in the NFL. So again, validation is not just about price, so value. It's about speed. It's about efficiency. It's about quality, taste. All those components drive that ranking. And what we feel good about is we led in every single one of those dimensions. So it's not, we didn't just get the value thing right with a dollar, you know, with cheaper food pricing, but we added efficiency, throughput, delicious, quality. So the whole array is what ultimately laddered up to us moving from 18th up to number one.
So what do you think that this actually means for the future of fandom in general? And I mean, specifically with the NFL, but more broadly, because in some ways, it's great that obviously you're raising the fan experience and the bar for it, but at the same time, the fan then expects more from everybody else. I mean, does this force everybody else to up their game? And do you even have conversations with other people in similar roles within the NFL about, in an almost consultative, this is what we did, this is what you should do?
The whole program stems from a core focus around the fan. If you listen to the fan and respond to what their wants are, their desires, their aspirations, the business outcomes will follow from that. We don't go into how can we maximize revenue at merchandise, at ticket, at PSL, at food and beverage. That's we believe is a short-sighted approach to creating a successful business. Our approach is firmly centered on the fan. If we amaze and delight the fan, good things will follow. And as you know, the table stakes keep going up. I mean, our competition is the 80-inch high-definition television that is in almost every living room in America with a stocked refrigerator just nearby. So our experience has to be compelling enough to get you out of your living room, to come downtown Atlanta, to park your car, to go through those obstacles to entry. So the experience has to be that compelling. And if you start with the fan in the center and work from there, good outcomes will follow. And just wanted to add to the point, because you asked about will other teams follow. At the end of the day, we're doing this because we believe it's the right thing to do. We will share our playbook, and we've had dozens of teams from football, soccer, basketball from around the country that have come through toward the stadium and asked lots of pointed questions about our food and beverage program. And we're sharing all of it. We're going to share the findings, the economics. We're going to do that. If at the end of the day, another team decides they think that's the right thing for their fan base, then great. But we know for our fan base, it's the right thing to do.
I love, just as a side, that you've got somebody at Sports saying that they'll share their playbook. It's very rare that you hear that, but obviously not the actual one. That'd be a little bit more difficult.
At the end, a vibrant sports landscape that has people coming out to Atlanta Braves or Atlanta Hawks or Atlanta United or our Falcons, we're not in competition with them. And we believe that the more vibrant the landscape, that's a better thing for the city of Atlanta. New companies are deciding to make relocations. They're relocating their headquarters because it's got a vibrant downtown. It's got an incredible airport that connects directly to the most cities in North America. It's evolving into a vibrant midtown and downtown. The more attractive that we can make that, we all benefit from that environment.
Side note, are you excited about getting Amazon?
Yeah, I don't want to jinx that, but it doesn't surprise me at all that we are on that short list, because again, all that Atlanta has to offer, from airport to infrastructure to downtown thriving environment to now, look at our three sports franchises: Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Atlanta Braves, brand new billion-dollar facility, $1.5 billion Mercedes-Benz Stadium. There's a major renovation taken for the Hawks. There's over $3 billion alone in infrastructure of investment just in the sports landscape. All that ladders up to quality of life, which attracts talent, which attracts companies like Amazon. So it's a virtuous cycle that's going on, and the kinds of investments that Mercedes-Benz Stadium represent helps to make Atlanta as a city more attractive.
What do you think about also, I think what was really interesting to me about the, like you were talking a little bit before about the entry ways and the, I hope I could say the magnetometers.
How about
okay.
that? The things at the airport that you walk through that,
yes,
that yeah.
Okay, I'm a Marvel Comics fan, so I say Magneto, but yeah.
Me too, but in some stadiums, you see that they get wanded. Those hand wands, that is an inefficient process, and it's actually...
It's less secure, isn't
it's
it?
It's much less secure. It's easier to kind of work around that that handheld stuff. So we made the investment, again, in magnetometers everywhere. It's a much faster throughput. It's much more secure. So those little investment decisions to go that extra mile in favor of our fan, that's what allows that 5-minute entry. Had we had hand wanding like we did at the Georgia Dome prior to that, we would never have been able to guarantee that kind of entry time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that that's one of those things that's really amazing. I think not to mention the fact that people can get through quicker. They're obviously finding their seats quicker. They're able to pick up food and beverage more often. I think that they're a 65% increase in point of sales over the Georgia Dome, which is probably why sales have gone up, even though you don't have to add more people to sell more product.
There's a reason why we set 5 minutes as our entry goal into Mercedes-Benz Stadium. There's an inflection point. After a certain waiting time, the fan ratings for the overall fan experience after 15 or 20 minutes, they take a dramatic drop. So we said, let's avoid that. Let's focus on getting people through faster, knowing that that has a positive halo on the entire experience.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think also once you get people through, how have you embraced technology in order to, because obviously people are there, they want the immediacy,
right.
But I think the sound, like the AV technology and the capabilities you've had, I feel like those have also kind of raised the bar in terms of what people are going to expect when they are at Mercedes-Benz versus when they go to a game elsewhere.
100%. First fully fiber optic stadium from not just backbone, but all the way out to the edge. No copper. So essentially that fiber optic infrastructure gives us unlimited bandwidth capability so that as our fan demands for digital and for access to their social networks increases, we're going to be able to grow with that. A distributed antenna system with partnerships with all of the big carriers allows that signal to get out. So Wi-Fi in the stadium, distributed antenna system, fully fiber optic. We've got the most sophisticated technology infrastructure of stadiums in the world. And again, it's all aimed at the changing needs of our fan base. Go back 10 years, folks weren't looking to live stream a particular event and post it out into Facebook and Twitter, right?
That's actually, because I know you got to go in a few, wanted to really quickly ask you, how the hell did you figure out what people were going to need a few years down the line? Because you had to obviously initiate this project a while ago, and things have moved so quickly in that short time frame. How do you anticipate what the fan experience of tomorrow has to look like today? Because you're really projecting a few years out when you started this thing.
We sure are, and we built a stadium that's designed to be there for 25, 30 years, and we have no idea what the digital needs are going to look like in 10 years. Nobody does. You can't even predict that. However, if we put a fully fiber optic backbone, that gives us that bandwidth that even as those fans' needs change, and we don't know how they're going to change, but we've got the bandwidth to accommodate that. So whatever next big thing happens digitally, we feel like we've at least given ourselves the best chance of meeting those needs by investing in an infrastructure that allows for that bandwidth.
And then I think probably since I know I gotta let you head out to LaGuardia in a second, how would you say really the ethos, the blank ethos that you that have been passed down to the organization, how has that permeated? How has that affected your mission and your dedication towards the fans?
He's got a set of core values, and those core values helped him build the second largest retailer on the planet in Home Depot. That same set of core values informs every decision that we make. It informs how I show up as a leader inside of our organization and the expectations that we have for ourselves. So it's about continuously innovate. It's about listen and respond. It's about putting people first. It's about leading by example, giving back. Those are the core values that inform us, and it actually sets a higher bar. So a perfect example, we're the first LEED Platinum stadium in the world, maybe the only one that may ever get that. And that was because Arthur said, if I'm going to live in a downtown community, I'm going to respect the people around me. So I'm going to invest in a LEED architecture to have the most environmentally friendly building stadium that I can possibly have. Not everybody would make that extra kind of investment, but that's a testimony to who Arthur is and to the kind of organization that we aspire to be every day.
I love it. Thank you so much. I'm going to try to avoid asking you on the record what you think is going to happen in the Super Bowl, but I look forward to see you guys there in the near term, hopefully. And Steve, thanks so much for making the time.
Great to be here. Thanks. Appreciate it, Jeremy.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Now, Jeremy, first of all, congratulations. I'm sure that, you know, the CEO of AMB Group, which basically owns and runs the Atlanta Falcons, Steve Cannon, probably has a lot of other things to do. It was great that he took the time to speak to you, so kudos on getting him to talk. What was your biggest takeaway or some of the highlights about the various ways that they're implementing technology to make the fan experience better?
Yeah, I think the magnetometers, which are not magnetometers, unfortunately, X-Men fans, that's something that I think is actually really interesting. When you're talking about like egress and getting people in to a particular location, I remember going to Madison Square Garden right after 9/11, and it seemed like they were changing their security process and their way of getting people in, you know, on a bi-weekly basis.
Yeah, it was like that. I mean, they're basically trying to deal with something they'd never dealt with before. We saw that at the airports. We saw that anywhere you tried to go. I mean, take Times Square, for example, on New Year's. I mean, these people have to wear adult diapers because once you're behind those, you know, police barricades, you cannot leave again until, you know, the very last piece of confetti's dropped. And, you know, so there are places where it's not super efficient to be a fan. And clearly the Atlanta Falcons have really tried to make this stadium, as he said, the Ritz-Carlton experience. And a couple of the things that I really took away from it that I find fascinating is basically how does this model and why can't this model be used at airports? I know that when they're telling you to arrive 2 hours before a domestic flight nowadays, I mean, part of the reason you fly is because you want to save time. You know, and I've added up times.
Oh, 100%. That frustrates me so much. I'm like, that's why I want to drive, you know, everywhere that's reasonably possible for that very reason.
Or hop on the Acela. I mean, my family's from Maryland and we're here in New York. We're about 4.5 hours away. But if I fly on the shuttle, which is basically an hour long, you know, experience, it's actually a 5 hour experience between getting, you know, to the airport, getting there 2 hours early, waiting, hoping not to be delayed, most likely delayed, getting there and then waiting around at baggage claim, et cetera. I may as well have just driven.
The only reason to go really is the fact that they have Cinnabon.
Yes, you're right. They have a wonderful, so if you're there 2 hours early, how many Cinnabons can you eat before you have to board?
About 2.5, but then you have to take a nap and then somebody's going to drag you onto the plane. So, but anyway, yeah, I think your bigger point is right, which is that some of this innovation that Steve's talking about can actually be implemented in other sports. And then the cross-pollination of ideas from one industry to another, I think is paramount. That's where you see a lot of innovation happen when kind of two different industries or two different disciplines collide.
Right. And you know what? There are certain things that he talked about, and there are certain things that are being done that are that are really applicable to a lot of other places. For example, okay, at Yankee Stadium, and I'm sure they have it here at the Atlanta Falcons Stadium as well. And a lot of the bigger stadiums are doing this thing where if you're, you know, a frequent fan or a frequent visitor, let's say you have season tickets or something along those lines, you ahead of time sign up with your, you know, fingerprints, and then you get to go to a shorter line because it's easier, and it's way easier for them as well because you get a certain amount of they look into your personal history a certain amount to assure that, you know, reasonably to whatever their knowledge is, you're not a criminal, and you know, you so they can pretty much trust, and so you can get through there simpler. Same idea with TSA PreCheck, et cetera. But why then can you not take that? Okay. And in the future, use it for everything. I mean, how annoying is it that every time you go to, let's say, a specialist that you've been sent to from your primary care doctor, you have to fill out the 800,000 other things and you have to physically write down your insurance card that you've already given them? I mean, why not be able to have almost like a CVS card, like that little keychain thing that has a SKU number on it, and boom, you know? All your information is there at the ready. I mean, it seems right. The lack of efficiency, hospital admissions, even things like going to see, you know, for your yearly, you know.
Well, yeah, I know. I think you're right. I think it's all about reducing friction and increasing efficiency. And these are the things that when we talk about, this is like a whole larger discussion. We're going to get so far away from like fandom, but I do think that when you're talking about the future of just about anything, and you look at all these different technologies that are being adopted, like AI, AR, VR, it's all about what value do they generate for society? Is it a thing that's truly adding value, or is it a thing that we're just doing because it's kind of cool?
Well, I think it's absolutely adding value. And if you're a fan, let's say you're a fan, okay, and you can get in there and you can get to your seat and you can, you know, enjoy, more time doing what you wanted to do, which was watch your team, you know, or join in the, you know, festivities or the entertainment aspects in between the game, as opposed to waiting in lines or searching for your car or searching for your seat, then obviously you're improving it. Now that's something that's like a leisure activity, but it was really interesting to me to see how easily that could translate to things that we have to do, like go to the doctor or, you know, go to the grocery store. Secondly, what I found fascinating about what he was talking about is that he actually referred to using, I guess, some of the same companies or technologies that Disney uses, which, you know, that the fan experience is legendary at Disney. But these are ways that he said the entry points and other areas are made not only to be as efficient as possible, but also to be as interesting as possible. So even if you are waiting, you're not waiting and just, you know, tapping your foot. You're actually getting to see and experience things that make it seem like it's going faster. And I thought that was a very interesting thing as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think let us know by all means what you thought of this episode, as always. And if people are interested in subscribing, if you're not yet a subscriber, Stitcher and Apple Podcasts are the best places to do that. You can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. So thank you for all of the feedback. We're so happy to be seeing that so many of you are enjoying listening to this stuff. So
my mom and dad, for one, love it. Shocker.
Oh, well, that's good. You know, like, so mom and dad Chetri, please, right. By all means, all of the feedback you can give, we're all on board for that. So once again, signing off, I'm Jeremy Goldman.
And I'm Kieran Chetri, and you've been listening to Future Proof.